This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:15 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. And we're moving on to look at how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted Orang Asli. This is coming particularly because of an article written by Colin Nicholas from the Centre for Orang Asli Concerns. Today, we want to look at the ongoing challenges and what needs to be prioritised.
So three activists, including Colin Nicholas, as well as Reta Rahim and Batoni, have been monitoring the COVID-19 situation among the Orang Asli communities, and they are highlighting a lack of clarity in official data and difficulty in determining the true number of cases. And that, in fact, even though the statistics we have point to things being quite high, that often cases involving Orang Asli are not indicated as such. Sometimes recorded clusters involve non-Orang Asli individuals. And they also talk about possible sources of the spread of the virus, where, you know, people returning to the villages, for instance, or outsiders who are unvaccinated entering villages, and really pointing out a very sobering situation when it comes to these communities.
Yes, talking also about the importance of actually understanding what it is that the communities are worried about and the difference in terms of their movements, right? Whether they are on the rural fringes or, for example, in interior villages. So to find out more about this, we are going to be crossing over to Kamal Solhaimi Fadzil, lecturer at the Department of Anthropology and Sociology at University of Malaya. Keep those thoughts coming, though. You can WhatsApp us and tweet us. In the meantime, Kamal, thank you so much for joining us. So as we mentioned earlier, activists are saying that there's a lack of clear data on the number of COVID cases among Orang Asli. Why might this be the case, and how does this lack of data affect the pandemic response for these communities?
Hi, good evening, Lynn and Sharmila, and thank you for the invitation to be on your program today. So one of the reasons perhaps there is a lack of clarity on the number of the actual situation could be due to lack of access to screening, or simply Orang Aslis are not going out for screening because there's a lot of stigma attached to being COVID positive. You know, so if you are not captured in the sort of screening information, you are not coming out if you are infected, this may then skew the numbers of positive cases. This may affect the authorities' response in dealing with COVID among the Orang Asli communities. The current approach, right, from my point of view, and I'm speaking here just as a layperson observing, right, what's been reported in the papers. From where I'm standing, it looks like there is a one-size-fits-all approach to dealing with COVID. And this might be a problem with communities with such high diversity in terms of locality, culture, and also, how should I say, experience and perceptions of our healthcare.
So could you tell us more about how the locality of these communities comes into play when we're looking at the impact of the pandemic?
Okay, so as I was trying to say earlier, the idea of a one-size-fits-all might not really work or might not address effectively or completely the COVID situation in the Orang Asli communities. One of it, as we mentioned earlier, in capturing the actual numbers of cases. And number two, in actually coming in to response to COVID within the villages. One of these response, of course, is in creating awareness for people to come up for screening. The other one is in getting vaccinated. And third one is getting treatment if they are found to be positive. Okay, how does locality affect all of this? So there are three types of ways to describe Orang Asli communities, right? So one is living in town, of course, in urban areas. The other one is on the fringes. And the third one might be in the interior. Communities that live in the interior, oftentimes accessibility is something that's quite a problem. You know, going in to identify that they are COVID positive and putting them under effective quarantine. And number two is that they live in close-knit communities, and if they're in the interior, in the interior, there's a chance for this to spread much faster within the community because the lack of, you know, applying SOP, so to speak, physical distancing, mask, wearing a mask, and etc. So people would be living much more closer. They would be constantly engaging with one another, and health facilities would be far away. If you're from the fringes where you live in, almost like a village setting, kampung setting, right? Where people live quite far apart, they live in individual settlements quite far apart, and they come out to town to work, or they work in a mixed sort of economic environment, economic activities. And they still have access to the nearby clinics, Clinic Desa. They have the district health facilities, the hospitals, right? So if they were to be infected, they can easily be identified and isolated for quarantine. So locality can affect how we address COVID for the Oranje community in these ways.
You mentioned the problem of stigma around COVID-19 on top of the challenge of physical access to healthcare. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think lack of access for the interior is one thing. But even for communities that are not so far in, there are other barriers. Stigma of COVID is one big barrier. You know, people are afraid to go for screening, for example, because they're afraid to find themselves tested positive for COVID. Once you're tested positive for COVID, most likely you're in the village itself, there's social isolation. And number two, of course, is if you are positive, how do you quarantine yourself? Okay, so that's another problem. There are all these, you know, scary stories about conditions in quarantine centers. I mean, this I'm hearing from third parties, of course. I'm not hearing it firsthand. And so this could be other things that prevent people from wanting to go out for quarantine. And then, of course, the fear of death. I mean, underlying this fear of being sick, right, with something such like COVID. You know, there's a lot of fake news in the social media today, which influences and affects how Oranje are relating to COVID. These are the barriers that exist. I think for the government, I think they have to think in this sense. They have to take into consideration sort of themes, social stigma, fear of death, and also accessing the right information.
And how has sentiment about the vaccine changed over the course of the pandemic among the Orang Asli community?
Yeah, so again, from conversations that we've been having, that I've been listening to in the last few days, is that there's still quite a lot of misinformation about what COVID is, about what the vaccines do, you know. There's a lot of fear that the vaccines are going to harm them. And so there's hesitation towards getting vaccinated. And so I think it is really important, if they're getting all this information from social media, and a lot of social media is sensational, it's conspiracy, you know, theories and stuff like that, right? So there's a lot of misinformation out there. What I think needs to be done is for the authorities or for the government to actually work with civil society, Orang Asli civil society, you know, and this could include NGOs like Center for Orang Asli Concern, Red Crescent, you know. It could be working with community leaders on the ground, individuals who have interest in Orang Asli well-being and concerns, you know. I think there is a need to reach out to a wider network of people to assist in addressing misinformation. So I just want to add as well, whether you are living in the interior or on the fringes or in town, many Orang Asli individuals today have access to the social media through their handphones. So whether, you know, they might not have line in the village, but when they come out to town, they got Wi-Fi, right? And they can download, you know, TikTok and all these other social media. Then they bring with them when they go back to the village, and they can share it with their villagers. So it's important for us to have this messaging, this public service announcements or videos that can help Orang Asli understand better what is COVID, what is screening, and what are the symptoms of COVID, and where should you go if you need to find out more about this. Or if you feel that you are infected, where do you go for treatment? And then, of course, what is the treatment of COVID? And finally, vaccination. That's one of the things that the government really needs to focus on, countering misinformation. And number two, making their services accessible. So some of the things that do come across from, again, third party, right? I'm listening from friends who work with people who are on the ground. And one of the grouses that come out is lack of communication. They might get screened, right? The authorities come in to screen them for COVID in the village, but then there are no information after that. But it should come back, you know, like, are you positive? Are you negative? The results of this test should come back to the village.
So what else should be prioritized now in the COVID-19 response for the Orang Asli community?
So as I mentioned earlier, was information, the correct information to counter misinformation. Number two, communication. You need to communicate better with the communities, particularly in those, you know, industry areas, getting them to go for screening, getting them to go for treatment, and getting them to go for vaccination. So countering misinformation can also help address stigma of COVID among the villagers. Number two, there is a need for recognizing that the Orang Asli is a small community. They're less than 1% of the national population. Figures like 3,000 may appear very small, but they can be seen larger when you recognize that the population, number one, is very small, and the population is a very close knit. Okay, so an infection in a village can quickly infect other members in the village if there are no steps taken to identify and isolate, okay, or quarantine. And that's important. So service for these communities may be different from health services in more urban locations. So there is a need to recognize that. So I would just like to add that these points that which I raised here came about from discussions with colleagues at UM and civil society actors.
Kamal, before we let you go, the government has been conducting outreach programs through mobile vaccination units at these interior villages. Do we know how effective this approach is?
Yeah, I think that's one of the challenges for those of us who are concerned about Orang Asli and how they are, you know, how they are managing during COVID is that we can't go down to the ground. So it's a lot of times we are listening from people calling or other people who've heard from their friends in the field, and so it's really hard for me at least to comment on the impact of mobile facilities. But I think there is a need for coordinated effort now. And that is tailored to Orang Asli conditions and concerns. You know, if you're scared of discrimination because you stigmatize the disease, you might just go further into another village and in turn you put that village at risk. So there's a need to recognize these dynamics. And this comes from actually reaching out to people who work with communities, who are community leaders themselves, to tailor a solution that is specific to the Orang Asli needs in this context. But, you know, despite all these concerns, we do need to also recognize the efforts by, you know, the doctors such as Dr. Izandis from Gombak Hospital, who has been putting in a lot of work in trying to reach out to Orang Aslis with COVID. And I think their efforts definitely need to be applauded.
Kamal, thank you so much for speaking with us. That was Kamal Sohaimi Fadzil, lecturer at the Department of Anthropology and Sociology at University Malaya, speaking to us really about COVID-19 and how it has impacted the Orang Asli communities and how a lack of information in some ways is making it more difficult to perform the right kinds of outreach, the right kinds of steps that need to be taken to address the pandemic there. If you have thoughts you'd like to share, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And after the 7:30 news today, it is Everyone's a Critic. Sharmila, what do we have lined up?
Well, it's a review of an exhibition that takes its inspiration from legends of Chek Siti Wan Kembang in Kelantan and reimagines them into a series of really beautiful paintings by Mastura Abdul Rahman.
So more on that after the 7:30 news. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.